All right, we're coming from Risky headquarters on a pretty stormy day. I'm Andy Groom, and over here is Jack Cooper.
Hey, Andy. Yeah, we got rain outside, so listeners are in for the long haul. We got time to kill. all right. Well, we got a good topic today, but I'm going to start off with a quote, something I just came across shortly before we entered the podcast studio. See if you recognize this. Take chances, make mistakes, and get messy. Whose catchphrase is that?
I don't know whose catchphrase it is, but like always with a good quote, I'm totally on board with it. Yeah, can you hit me with who it is?
It's the Magic School Bus. Just watching it.
That's super cool.
Yeah, with my science class. So yeah, just spotted that and through the episode and. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
even, I like that. Yeah, Miss Frizz, she's a visionary. All right, on to the topic. That quote went about as good as their quotes normally do. So.
Yeah.
So what are we looking at today?
Well, it's actually a little callback to our last episode. So we sort of got talking about a whole bunch of mixed bag. And one of the things that came up was we sort of talked a bit about secondary at one point and how things get done. And it sort of put you on a path to talk about subjects in school and how those sort of things work. And then we just did a bit of mulling over that. And so we thought that why is having subjects in school, whole school, can be a bit of a bad thing.
Yep.
I guess.
Cool. Perfect. Yeah. So subjects, do we need them? That's our kind of thinking here. And we got a couple of sort of questions that we want to kind of base our thinking around, I suppose. And firstly, you know, this idea of could we scrap subjects? Can we get rid of it? Is there a different way of doing it? Would that actually help students?
Yeah. And would that be across the board as well? Like, when we're thinking about that, usually we're thinking about our sciences, maths, reading, writing, or English or literacy. But what about those creative subjects as well, with the arts, where there's a lot of subjects that feel like they've already been pushed to the outer? And then, well, what happens then, I guess? Just something to that I thought was an interesting angle.
So what kind of prompted us, I guess we were just talking about things and bouncing around things that we'd seen recently. And then of course, there's this old kind of go-to in education is like, oh, well, what do they do in Finland? Because they seem to always, they're pretty world renowned for like having done things in a new way and doing pretty well. Yeah. And from what things that I'd seen, they've got a pretty strong focus on what they call phenomenon-based learning. But essentially, themes, conceptual themes that guide the learning rather than having it in the basis of subjects. And yeah, I think there's a lot to like there. But you also see strands of that running through lots of different things. So we're a PYP, MYP school, and obviously inquiry-based learning is a big part of that.
Yeah, so our curriculum's based on the conceptual understanding. That's what drives it. It's a framework, and we get to sort of adjust that to our own context, I guess. We're in a pretty good spot, and I guess where we come from as well, New Zealand and Aussie, it's pretty inquiry driven, but we know that's not the same everywhere.
Yeah.
And even in these inquiry driven schools, that doesn't mean that everything is transdisciplinary, like going between the subjects. I think it's something worth talking about because it affects everyone. And yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, let's take a short break and we'll come in with a little bit of theory behind it and throw some weight behind some of these ideas.
Cool.
All right, Ando, time for theory in a minute.
Set your clock to it. It's going to be 1 minute exactly.
Bang on a minute. All right. Just to start off, I was listening to a TED Talk by Ken Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pretty well respected. And he was talking about subjects and kind of spotted that what he thinks the current situation with the way we teach subjects basically comes from two different things. He mentions the Enlightenment. So this idea going back from the founding of knowledge and it being like this thing that you need to obtain, and intellectual people kind of get it, and they get it from books and whatever. That's one way of sort of thinking about what guides the way we treat academic learning.
Yeah.
But then also the industrial age was really big in that. So factories being ways that people work and that kind of thing. And that really comes through in the ways that schools operate. It's departments, it's sitting in rows, it's this kind of thing. So those two kind of big factors really inspired it. And essentially that's out of date now. The world isn't like either of those times, but we still learn in that way.
Yeah. And something that I've just sort of spotted when you're talking about that, and I don't want to take us down the wrong path, but when I was looking at that enlightenment stage, it's sort of like it's not about equality or equity in learning. And I still feel like that is actually what our schooling can be like for a lot of people, is that there are people who get all the knowledge and will succeed outside of school, and there's the people who won't get it, and what about them?
Yeah, and they're expected to be to kind of think of themselves as not being smart, right?
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous, because I've used this example before, but I can remember seeing having a contractor come to our house to do concreting and watching him figure out the spaces and doing like calculus or trigonometry or whatever it was to like figure out the area and the amount of sandbags that he was going to need and blah, 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 and this stuff. And I was just watching him like just pump out this sophisticated maths that I was like, how do you know how to do that?
Yeah.
But he's smart, because he's smart. Yeah. But I was thinking he's a concreter, but he was very intelligent and knew how to do that. So,
And so I guess following on from that, the sort of theory side of things, we talked before about our curriculum. And one of the things that I noticed in that is this curriculum is sort of set up to try and move people from an idea of single subjects and try and push them towards finding connections between subjects and different things, right?
Yep.
And that sort of, and trying to tap into people's prior knowledges, that sounds weird, and experiences, and making it meaningful to them. And like, if it's your job to use maths, you know, you use maths. It's not like, well, I'm a builder and this is what I do. Oh yeah, but I definitely think that sort of example is like really what learning should be like as well, right?
Yes.
That everyone is capable of doing those things and just pulling from the different parts when they need it in the learning, rather than it just being like, you're good at this but not good at this, and these are your experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. What else did you find in theory land?
Theory land? I read an article that was from the Washington Post that was pretty interesting about a guy who had lots of experience as a graduate of maths and a professor of computer science. And he was just talking about why students don't like school, and he went through a subject by subject guide. And it was like, yeah, it was just fascinating to sort of read someone's perspective. And I, you know, like I was on board with his brand and what he was saying. But just a lot of what was being said and what my takeaways were is that it's not necessarily the subject by subject nature of everything. It's the content within that subject that's almost getting questioned. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know, how is this relevant to me and my life when I'm doing history and when I'm doing economics or when I'm doing maths? Is like, it's just all these things that maybe came from the industrial age that were important then and really valuable then.
Yep.
Hey, but we've moved on. And so where's the change in our education?
Yeah. Just the thought that came to mind, why students don't like school or whatever. I think if you asked any student that in secondary school, they would probably say, I don't like this subject. I don't like this subject. I really like this. They wouldn't be saying, oh, well, I enjoy working in teams, but I don't really like when I have to present. They don't talk about like the aspects. They talk about like, they just declare that I don't like that subject.
Yeah.
Like maths, no. Or, and sorry to pick on maths because lots of people do like maths, but it could be anything, right? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Just not interested. And it's over for that subject. Then if they're going to, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's the theory in a minute. let's take a quick break and we'll unpack some of these things. Righto. So let me throw something, a thought at you here, Andy. Yeah. So if we were to scrap subjects and go to something where it's very much project-based, theme-based learning, then potentially there's the possibility that every unit you do, every time that you're working in class, you're working on something that draws on lots of areas, which would mean every experience would have the potential to have something that kids are really good at and some aspect that kids are not very good at.
Mm-hmm.
Compare that to, let's say we're talking about this kid that's not good at maths. Every single time he walks into the maths room, it's difficult for him. And he always struggles. And that's the only thing he gets, right? Whereas you could see an opportunity to reframe their day in a different way, where they're always having struggles and always having challenges and always being successful. Right?
Yeah. Like when you're talking about that as well, I definitely, when you're talking about areas, I naturally went to replace that word areas with subjects, where it could actually really be anything. It could be a skill that they're really good at and something that they need to work on in that. And it does link to one of the things that I was reading earlier about how students as well compartmentalize their learning. So if they're working in maths, they will keep that knowledge for maths, and if they're working in English, they'll keep that knowledge for English.
Yep.
And it won't go across the subjects. And sort of we really want to push that idea that this is the work that I'm doing in maths. Oh man, it connects to humanities, or it connects to whatever it is, and finding those connections across the subjects.
Yeah.
And I think I notice that with the grade 5 students I currently teach, but also I think every class that I've taught is when we are writing during literacy, during writing time, the students can use their spelling skills, their punctuation skills, ambitious vocabulary. And then you ask them to write, to journal something in maths, or to have a reflection and in inquiry. And they use a completely different way of writing that's like littered with errors and that. And it's that compartmentalization of their learning, right? Well, mm-hmm. I only have to think about my writing during literacy time and not sort of at other points throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that in so many things. Like, I'm just wondering, you know, students that feel like they're really good at talking in front of audiences.
Yep.
But they're not good at science. Would they ever be like, oh, there's a science oral presentation. I'm not great at science, but that's fine because I'm really good at talking to people. I'm going to be able to do this well. They'll be like, no, I'm just, this is going to be bad for me. And they'll collapse at a thing that they're actually really good at, because they're just focused on the subject aspect of it.
Yeah, and I think as well, like the flip side of that is students who identify them as selves as shy can actually have moments to shine where you wouldn't expect them to. So like maybe standing up and reciting a speech or you know, debating, maybe they'll crumble a bit. But if you put them in a dance situation or a singing situation in front of an audience, then, you know, they can really blow you away with the fact that they're standing in front of an audience.
Totally.
And putting themselves out there in
totally.
what, in my opinion, is a much more difficult situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess, like, trying to bring it back to what you sort of started us off on, is that you need that, right?
Yeah.
You need that opportunity for kids to see, like, that whenever you do anything, you do it well, and you try and find connections between towards other things. And maybe if kids can who are shy can realize, oh man, like, if I have a way of being when I get on stage to perform, I can bring that way of being into having a conversation with other students in the class, or you know.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And huge for the teacher too, because the teacher is really not set up for success either when a kid feels like they're not good in that subject and, and never will become good, because you're only seeing one side of that student. And yeah, and then you do have those moments, and it happens to, especially in secondary school, right? It happens to every teacher. They're like, oh wow, I never saw that side of this kid. Like, how many times has that happened?
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, probably because they don't like your subject, and that's it. You know what I mean? And I think we touched on this in the last episode, but listeners may not have listened to that or whatever, but yeah, I think primary, you get a lot more time, you get a lot of opportunity to kind of see the different areas of the kids. But then in secondary, I just don't know what kids are possible outside of the science class. I don't know what else they've got, what other skills they have.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll chuck something at you then. And it's something that I've heard you sort of talk about before, so I think it's a great one for you. And it's like, well, what is it that this idea that high school subjects are so difficult that they require a specialist anyway? Like,
yeah. So, right, exactly. So I think that, so if I think about the Australian context and New Zealand context, and probably a lot of international schools, I would imagine, primary school tends to not be taught in subjects, and then in secondary it's kind of like, well, now the maths is really complicated, or the science is really high level, so we need a specialist teacher. You can't really have a generalist teacher in secondary school, and that's kind of the way that it is. So firstly, subjects aren't really that complicated that you need a specialist, right? I don't think, like, you know, that might offend people, but if they are that hard, it's too hard for students, because you're at the same time saying you need an expert in science to be able to teach this science class, but also every kid needs to know it.
Yeah.
Like, those are two, like, deeply conflicting ideas. Every student needs to master this science class, but you need an expert to teach it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
In saying that, you might think, well, how would I go if I was in grade 10 and I've got to cover all these subjects and I got to teach them maths and history and science and whatever, and I don't know, I only know one of those areas. And that is a problem, right? But the problem in that case to me is still grounding ourselves in the subjects that we need to cover and the content in those subjects that we need to cover. There's the real problem, right? Breaking down the walls between the departments is one thing, but the solution is not necessarily a teacher that knows everything and teaches all the subjects, right? We gotta break down a deeper layer before we get anywhere, really.
When you put that expectation on the teacher as well of like, this is your area of expertise, and you see them as the expert in science, then you might not be seeing them for the complete package that they could be, and like, but you're also an expert in this skill, which actually is also needed in English, and it's maybe making things a little bit too narrow. To make the most of the assets that you have in your school.
Sure. We often like to consider the haters, right? So what about this? What's the other side of it? Because obviously it tends to come across that we like the new idea that is not being done, right? And we don't like the old way. But we got to consider sort of the other side of it. And something that I was kind of thinking of is, you could make this argument that people point to these really amazing breakthroughs and innovations that have happened when a biologist decides to work with a computer company, and they come together and they create some amazing biotech thing, right?
Yeah.
And then these are these awesome breakthroughs that happen in our world. And that is definitely the pulling together of disparate fields together, right? But don't forget that it was actually an expert in biology and an expert in computers coming together. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're not two generalists who are both kind of interested in both things. Mm-hmm. They were deeply knowledgeable about their specific specialist area, right? And so I guess there is some kind of case for being really good in and being really having a really deep depth of knowledge in certain areas. But to me, I feel like that can come later. Like you develop that expertise after you've, I don't know, maybe in university or even.
Yeah. And so, yeah, well, maybe that is the time for the really specific deep dive is when they get to university, and it's a more sort of general way of thinking and that and less specialized and more sort of moving between the subjects, so they have really good experiences to draw on when they get to that higher education of university.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do we need a little bit of a break to
to reset?
Yeah, nice. Let's take some time. We'll be right back.
Through this process, I had a little look at our the PYP framework because it is transdisciplinary. It's looking to bring all subjects together. So I've been doing it for 5 years, and I've got people to support me and to help me with my knowledge in that. I've got the big picture of where the school's going and what they're doing.
Yep.
And we're just talking off air a little bit about students and the fact that they don't have this big picture of what's going on, and where they're sort of just chucked a relentless amount of information constantly, and just for them to be successful, they have to rely on us to determine what is the important information.
Yeah.
And to then try and lock it in their brain, soak it up somehow.
It's tough. Like I think it's pretty common practice to like make a learning objective clear to a student at the start of a lesson, right? That seems to be a pretty big thing that is expected in most people's classroom. I think everyone would see that there's a benefit in telling the kid what you're going to concentrate on for that lesson. But did anybody ever tell them the learning objectives for the year or their entire learning experience? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think many kids have much more direction beyond the day to day or possibly unit to unit, but
I can challenge that a little bit.
Okay.
Because we have like our guiding mission statements and like we have our little slogans that sort of let the kids know where they're meant to get to by the end of their journey.
Yes.
But my question, I guess, is that that all the things that we're saying, man, you're going to be, when you leave our school, you're going to be an absolute great learner. You're going to be a lifelong learner, which we all want. However, when we're in class, we're going to focus on the learning objectives and the specific things that you need to know. Whoops.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that we have this big picture of them as a successful learner at the end, yet we only have these tiny little learning objectives each step of the way that we're like, oh, we've got to tick them off because we've got to be held accountable for our job.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, that absolutely is it in a nutshell, is that we have values that we want our kids to go off into the world with, right? Being respectful people or caring people or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we devalue that by actually, in actual practice, measuring them along the way by subject-oriented skills, whether they can do this or they cannot do it, right? And I think by having that, you're never going to convince a student that something else is more valuable. Like, it's more important to be a good person. I think a lot of people would believe in that, but you're giving them the wrong impression by never focusing on that, really. You're always focusing on whether they can perform algebra or whether they can perform this skill or whatever, right? So you're really sending mixed messages there.
Mm. Well, what are we going to do to sort of change that? Like, is it encouraging people to sort of break down some borders? And I'm not in a position where I can walk into our school and say, hey, come on, let's get rid of all these subjects and start something radical and fresh.
Try and see what happens.
But we can, I guess, as a group of educators, we can start thinking about, well, how can I use the skills? How can I connect my subject or this lesson that I'm teaching to another subject? And let's try and start sort of breaking down some of those barriers a little bit, I guess.
So here's a thought that I had been recently having, and maybe this rings true for listeners as well, is when I'm doing something in my life now and I think of like, where did this knowledge or where did this ability come from? A lot of the time, it's very rare that I have been at like, oh yeah, that was that little nugget that I learned in the grade 8 history class that just got me through right there, right? It seems to be very rare that it's, I can remember a school experience being really formative. But it is very common that I can like recall learning that in like a real life situation. And it just tends to be that a lot of formative experiences are outside of life, right? And I'll just kind of throw a couple of examples there. Is spent a lot of time, my parents had a business.
Yeah.
And so a lot of time like helping in the business, and I definitely think if I've got an ability to kind of talk to people and communicate, definitely come from like dealing with customers and making small chat and that kind of thing. Like I just know that was formative. And so that's not related to school at all. And another thing is like when I was young and I got like my first computer, I was really interested in like creating content on there, like doing animations and stuff, doing like stop motion. And I can remember like looking up tutorials online, looking up YouTube thing. And I don't know. I mean, I guess that's pretty commonplace now, but it feels like it was a skill that I learned, this ability to kind of go out and find it myself, interpret it, try it, test it, do it. And like, just learn things myself using online as a platform. And I use that all the time, right? Like any kind of software or whatever. And again, that didn't come from school. It just came from me like dicking around on my computer.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I think, I don't know, I'm interested to see whether that rings true for you and for other people, that like these really important formative experiences come from it's not subject based, it's not school based. It's just real.
Yeah. And I think that, like when you're talking about that, I was trying to think back to like, oh, what are some of those moments that I really remember as like, I did a good job with that. And like, I wasn't super hopeless at school, did enough to get through, but I wasn't someone who would be striving for A's all the time. And so those moments where I absolutely crushed an assignment, other times, like I can remember writing a review for Apollo 13, the movie with Tom Hanks and that, and I crushed it. I got
great
like
movie.
Yeah, I got 34 out of 36. I got whatever grade for that, and I was just like, yes. But that's totally, that was, I'm valuing that on the fact that
the praise,
I got the score of 34 out of 36. It's not like I haven't gone out and reviewed more movies, like you know, it's not something that I use. It was just that moment. And then I think back to not so long ago, I was trying to use Adobe Illustrator.
Yep.
And I was trying to, for the sort of first time, and I had to cut up pieces because I wanted to make an inquiry cycle and have them different colors and that. And it was such a hard slog. And like, I tried this way and it didn't work, this way it didn't work. I got in touch with you and was just like, how do I do this, man? Like, help me out. And you gave me some pointers, and I was like, I still don't really know how to do it. And I kept going and kept going. And it didn't finish perfectly.
Yeah.
And I was still super proud about that and nice. That process that I went through. And I think that, like, those are the things, right? When I've shifted out of school, it's not about getting things perfect. And, of course, you're striving to get something that is visually good and that. But I don't know. I feel like schooling can value the score, the result, rather than that process that I went through of just like, man, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll try this. Oh, that hasn't worked. I need an expert. Mm-hmm. I'm going to reach out for an expert now.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really, like, that's a learning experience that I want my kids to have. It's a learning experience that I want my students to have, is just battle through it. When you need an expert in the field, well, that's when you go to your science teacher, right? Yeah. That's when you go to your maths teacher or your design teacher, and that would be such a powerful way for kids to learn, I reckon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I could kind of sum up, I guess, maybe it goes back to what we saw in the theory of this kind of the Enlightenment age. And I think that the idea still runs through schools, if that, like, there is knowledge for you to obtain and things that you should know and sink into the back of your head. But in actual reality, like you were describing with learning how to use something, like, actually what's more important is the ability to just make things happen and create, you know, find a way to solve this problem and, you know, come up with something useful. And how do you, just working through a process is a more valuable skill than knowing lots of stuff.
Hey, like, if we're wrapping up here, I just want to, like, we've talked many times about the quote lead off. And something that was really interesting was that we were sort of talking, we were reflecting on how well that quote went early doors. But it's actually the story behind it that was, like, was actually the interesting thing and the reason why you picked that quote. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, you can say no.
Yeah, no, maybe that's a, yeah. We were talking about that we are about 10 from 10, 0 from 10 zero on the quotes, 10, whether it works or not. So I don't know. Yeah, what I spotted when I was watching the Magic School Bus with my science class and hearing that quote and kind of what stood out to me, so the quote for those that don't remember it.
Me.
It was just kind of a catchphrase of Miss Frizzle in Magic School Bus. Take chances, make mistakes, and get messy. And what stood out for me is, like, I just was thinking, this is a pretty old TV show. It's like set in the 80s. Not set in the 80s, made in the 80s, I think, or 90s or whatever. Like, it was definitely already made when I was a kid. And what she has just described, like, her first and foremost thought to, or her first and foremost advice to the kids is, take chances, so be a risk taker, risky business. We love that.
Yeah.
Make mistakes, so this kind of failure thing of, you know, don't be afraid to make mistakes, and get messy, so hands on.
Yeah.
I just was thinking, like, because those ideas seem like they're kind of quite contemporary, and at the time, I mean, that, you know, like, and what I said to you off air was, like, she didn't say, don't forget the periodic table of elements, kids, or, you know what I mean? Like, don't forget some facts. She was like, that's what was important to her as a teacher. And obviously, I mean, look at the Magic School Bus, and it's just genius.
Yeah.
Like, the way that the kids learn in that, obviously it's not possible, but, like.
But yeah, the idea of the experiential
sort of learning.
Yeah, I think it's bang on. And I think that's a really nice spot to say our farewells and wrap this bad boy up. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was good. Hopefully that episode came out good. And
yeah.
But hey, we're motivated. We're back in the studio twice in 2 weeks. So I think we're going to keep pumping these episodes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Again, enjoyable. And I'll catch you next time.
Cheers.